You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the podcast that showcases the big ideas, the innovations, and the visionaries in the food industry, where we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, I'm a TV presenter, and I'm a gastronaut. And I want to take you back in time to a year where hot honey infused with chilies from Kashmir was on everyone's table, where Japanese food influenced cooking from across the world more than ever before, and when the trend for pickling became insatiable. Now, I don't know how far back your imagination has taken you, but those were the predictions for the big food trends in 2021. But did they ring true for you, I wonder? Predicting food trends is, of course, very difficult. Not impossible, but difficult. But it's vitally important for businesses wanting to get ahead. So today on Table Talk, the question is, which tastes will define 2022? With me, a pair of soothsayers, clairvoyants, food industry professionals, we have Sophie Davies, senior buyer at Planic Organic, a place that prides itself on being at the forefront of innovation. Hello there, Sophie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
That's great to have you. And we've also got Mike Hughes, head of insight and research at the food industry market research company FMCG Gurus. Hello there, Mike.
Hi, Stefan. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. Now, we'll come to the question of flavour in a moment. But first of all, the concept, the whole concept, the whole idea of predicting the future. Some of us do it for fun. But what part does it play in your job, Sophie? Is it really important or is it just a bit of fun?
Well, as you say, Planet Organic pride themselves on being at the forefront of innovation and leading on product trends. So really, yes, it is absolutely at the essence of what we do. Whether that's, you know, international research prior to COVID, we spent a lot of our time going to LA or to various trade shows in Europe and further afield. We saw kombucha come out of one of those trips in about 2015. So that helps us kind of formulate where we think trends are going. You know, having both a kind of work and personal interest in the local food scene and kind of what's happening within food markets in London and pop-up restaurants. There's, you know, many angles we look at, social media, what's trending there with influencers, you know, the kind of more day-to-day of category reviews. So, you know, what's working, what's not working, and what could be better. And we kind of look at all those sides of our research and our sales, and we think, okay, what's next? What do we think is going to be big moving into the future? So yeah, really, it is a big part of what we do at Planet Organic.
Okay. Now, Mike, you're looking at the numbers, really. Your company looks at the trends and tries to predict what might be meaningful for the industry. Briefly, how do you go about it and how often do you get it right? Does it matter if you get it wrong?
I mean, as you say, predicting what's going to happen in 5 years' time is very difficult in one aspect. We know that consumers are very dynamic with their attitudes and behaviours. They're constantly evolving. There can be market disruption. Just to give you an example, we came up with a whole host of trends at the beginning of 2020 and then had to change them about 4 months later. So, you know, it can be very difficult to forecast what's going on. Obviously, you don't want to get that wrong because, you know, brands can no longer rely on just their heritage. They need to continuously grow. They align with consumers. So, you know, but what I would say is what's more important is to keep it general. The broader the trend, the more you can align with. So, for example, rather than focusing on a specific ingredient and saying this will, you know, excel over the next 5 to 10 years. Instead, what you need to say is, you know, this is the element of consumer behavior. How's it evolving and kind of what type of products are consumers looking for? So that's something very general brief. You know, over the last, you know, even the last few years, we've seen a whole host of, you know, product categories where people said, will they explode and fizzle out? You've got CBD, you know, will it ever become mainstream? Truly mainstream, and will the big brands take it on? You've got hard seltzer in the USA, for example, where it's like, will this eventually rival the beer market or will it fizzle out in a couple of years? You know, you've got things such as postbiotics, prebiotics, will they become as popular as probiotics? But, you know, there's so many general, you know, trends, and the reality is if a brand is an early adopter of that, if they can capitalize on it, then absolutely there will be demand there. And nobody wants to be told that to invest in a certain ingredient, for example, and it flops. But I think what's important is, because there's no dynamic, there's no science to this, and it's more prone to changes, it's actually more about monitoring how consumer attitudes are evolving. And once you do that, you can say, well, what's next? What kind of thing will they want next? And then you can look at some of these new markets that are emerging and say, well, actually, this will really align with the mainstream. This will perhaps have a small niche market, but will eventually fizzle out. So I would say, when you're looking at things over the next 5 years, because absolutely you don't want to get it wrong, keep it as broad as possible.
Yeah. Okay. So, Sophie, is this big business? You know, are the things that might crop up really going to be a large percentage of your sales, or are they the icing on the top of the basics that you flog every day? You know, your organic vegetables, what the mainstays of the business? Is it just the sparkle on top of everything that makes you seem whizzy and forward thinking? You know, and if you get it wrong, how accountable are you for these? You know, will the company go under, or is it just that you don't get that sparkle that you'd hope?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously we have the core commodities and staples of organic produce and bakery and kind of supermarket typical categories. But actually, we are a destination for speciality, and we always have been. So we kind of take it upon ourselves to kind of pioneer within those key wellness trends. And actually, that is where we see the most sales growth. So if we look at our most searched items on our website for 2021, up there is keto, vegan cheese, collagen, bone broth, kombucha. So it accounts for a very large percentage of our sales. And if we're looking at keto, for example, that's a kind of a trend that's been with us at Planet Organic for kind of the last few years, and it's ever evolving. So the sparkle is exciting, but it's also as much about the sales too.
It is about the bottom line as well. And so, you know, if you've made a prediction and it doesn't work, is that a vast amount of investment that's down the drain? You know, I mean, I know that COVID changed a lot of, you know, shifted the goalposts for a lot of things. But, you know, if you've got to present to the board at the end of the year and say, we've screwed this up, is that you out of a job?
No, I wouldn't say so, because I think that's kind of, you know, what we really do at Planet Organic, is we've got a test product to see kind of if there is scope and if there's room for movement there. And, you know, sometimes it is about trial and error, but we're very, very reactive as a buying team. So we're able to kind of see what's working and not what's not working. But I guess we have very close working relationships with our suppliers. And so I guess that's kind of probably where the loyalty lies in terms of the relationship of, you know, supporting brands on shelf. But, you know, we've all kind of worked very closely. So we tend to kind of, you know, be pretty confident about something when we go into it, really.
Yeah. Okay. So let's, before we go ahead for 2022, I know we're pushed for time here, but let's have a very quick review of 2021. I tried a couple of things for the first time. I've been pickling the shit out of everything that moves. the kids seem to pick up quite nicely. But there weren't that many new things. I think there were new sort of drifts in things that I tried. We got very heavily into Pokeballs in my house for some reason. But what about you? I mean, Mike, why don't you start? What were the products that really defined the year for you?
Well, I mean, in terms of products, there's a number of different areas. You know, immune health was a big area, so we saw a real interest in functional ingredients, you know, products that boosted immune health, and that will become more and more common as the one phrase that we started to hear more and more in 2021, that we'll definitely hear more in 2022, is the microbiome and the link with beneficial bacteria and immunity. So there was a big drive in products like that that contained ingredients such as vitamin C, for example. At the same time, consumers did continue to become more experimental. You know, there was demand for products from around the world, and not just specifically from a country, but within a region around that, because they wanted the heritage and the story behind that. And we also saw a growth in demand for better for you products, because if you characterize consumer behavior in 2021, consumers became a lot more health conscious. You know, over the last 18 months, they've reevaluated their health in a way that they've not done so before. And initially, it was kind of like, well, how vulnerable am I to COVID-19? Which in April, obviously, nobody really knew. As that evolved, people were able to perform a risk assessment. They either got the illness or they realized that perhaps if they were a certain age, for example, they were less at risk of serious complications. But what they actually did was, because they had a lot more time to think than whatever, and, you know, health was in their face in a way that it wasn't before, they said, well, actually, you know what, even if I'm not at risk of COVID, what are the long-term lifestyle problems am I at risk of because of my current diets and lifestyles? And all of a sudden, I've got more time to think about this, and my shopping is being influenced by, you know, restrictions on movement, but then also kind of changing priorities. So, and we saw a real growth in products that were deemed kind of better for you and guilt-free. So I mentioned in the US, for example, hard seltzers went through the roof. And the reason for that is consumers, you know, they didn't want to give up on daily indulgences. They turned to alcohol for moments of escapism. But actually, if it was one that was reduced calories, reduced sugar content, and kind of it alleviated stress without making them feel guilty afterwards, that was something that was ideal to them. We also saw a growth in plant meat, for example, so consumers could enjoy that experience of tucking into meat and that whole thing of the juiciness, the getting on your hands, a very sensory element of it, but not feeling guilty again afterwards. And then again, for things like premium chocolate, you know, we looked at there was a growth in the premium chocolate market. And the reason for that, people were saying, well, if it's real, if it's authentic, it's high quality, then, you know, it's got less of the artificial and the chemicals in. So what I would say was really benefited in 2021 was these products that were either deemed better for you and guilt-free. These products that offered some experimentation, particularly to compensate from consumers visiting food service outlets less frequently. And then also on the functional side, you know, anything that was linked to immunity, so kind of your vitamin C's, probiotics, etc. So a real polarization of trends. And I think that's something that's interesting to highlight as well. Sometimes consumers can show very conflicting need states, where in one sense they want products that can boost their health, but in the other they're saying, well, how can I go about enjoying my daily indulgences without having to compromise on them?
Bloody consumers, they're a pain in the bum, aren't they? Hello there, just me. Just want to break into the conversation to say that if you're enjoying this, you might want to check out another recent edition. We have an episode which looked at the history of flavour and taste, and it was a real insight into why humans go for particular tastes and how sensory science is being used by the food industry to develop new products. It's a great listen. Check out the website for more information, foodmatterslive.com, and while you're there, check out the archive too. We've got nearly 200 editions which examine every aspect of the food industry. Now, back to the chat. So, Sophie, I mean, I think a lot of the things that Mike mentioned there were things that had already been around, but there was just this acceleration that COVID and the navel-gazing of COVID just shoved the immune-boosting stuff and the better-for-you products really to the fore. But were there any things that were surprises for you?
Yeah, so, you know, the food scene is ever evolving, and there's been a kind of a paradigm shift in how, you know, we all as consumers view food and our relationship with it. And I think that's obviously come out of COVID, and we're still seeing that play a bit. I suppose from what Mike said around immunity, that's been a really big kind of growth space for us.
And can you give some examples?
Yeah, so the liposomal vitamin C, there's been, you know, various sachets, different format of taking vitamins and also communicating functionality through that too. Mm. You know, there's also Moju, which is a drinks brand, which is widely available. They're doing dosing bottles. So they do the kind of fiery ginger shot, or yes, the turmeric shots, or the vitamin D shots, and actually taking that to the next level and making it more of a supplement drink. So you have it in your fridge and you can have a shot each morning from that bottle. So yeah, that's been big, and I think we're going to see it, you know, that continue to grow.
And that's significant in sales as much as the sort of the shininess and the impact of it sort of the change.
Absolutely. You know, it ranks up there with our best performing drinks, really, and actually within the fresh section. So, yeah, the sales really say that. And kind of in looking at kind of other areas, I suppose low sugar has been really big for us. Mm-hmm. That's spanning across many different categories. And if we're looking at particular categories, I suppose chocolate We actually launched our own brand range of Planet Organic low sugar chocolate, which, to your point, has been as much about the kind of, you know, the innovation and excitement as it has about the sales, and it's ranking up there in our best performing product. So our hazelnut praline is a hero product, and it comes down to texture and the product profile flavor as much as it does about the functionality of the ingredients.
Okay. Now, what I'm interested in a little bit, we'll talk about the general predictions for 2022 in a second, but issues like HFSS foods and where they can get placed in stores and things like that, do these sort of conceptual ideas and regulatory ideas have any impact on future gazing? Mike, do you see that it's not a level playing field this year, that the trends are going to be guided by government, effectively by regulation and the way that products can be placed?
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely not a new trend at all. You only have to look at things such as probiotics and nutraceuticals and see the variance across countries. So obviously that will, the government influence it. And I can't specifically speak, and give country-specific examples. But the one thing we always say when it comes to innovation is consumers would rather have the right type of innovation rather than a raft of innovation. So, you know, the one thing I mean, we've been to trade shows before, and I remember walking around with a category manager, and we was looking at all these really innovative, great products. And he said, well, you know what, about 90% wouldn't make the shelves. And the reason for is you can't say that claim. You can't do that. So there's these nice products where, okay, whilst they're being showcased, but then when we got into the main market, and we know that consumers are quite skeptical anyway, consumers are simultaneously seeking out, these products that offer miracle solutions whilst becoming skeptical of products that are positioned around offering miracle solutions. It's a very difficult thing. And what I would say is, the regulations shouldn't actually be a barrier. It should be something that, people can capitalize on, because particularly as consumers want more scientific evidence now to support claims, it's no longer just good enough saying this product does this. Consumers want to say, well, tell me how. Give me the evidence and, give me a snapshot on the packaging, give me a QR code on the packaging that I can access more information, put it dedicated there on your website. And I think they actually would more likely support government regulation, even if sometimes the industry might think, this government regulation is unnecessary, because actually then if you can streamline and focus on the right type of innovation, that's something that will boost consumer confidence in the long term, as opposed to a bunch of products that you can get online and it says it will do this, this, and this, and that it you find out it doesn't.
Yeah, it makes sense. Okay, now, Sophie, obviously one of the large influences has been COVID, and as Mike's mentioned, but are we looking at a kind of, such a naff thing to say, but are we going to be looking at some sort of COVID fatigue and the other issues coming to the fore? So the fallout from COP26, for instance, suddenly there's a focal shift in what people are concerned about. Do you think other issues like that, rather than just innovation and goji berries are big this year, but those huge concepts that shift our worldview, is that going to impact predictions for 2022, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it takes time for those, events to have an impact and influence decisions. But I think over time, you start to see it. It's definitely harder to measure. But as buyers, it certainly drives us further to ensure we are finding those products which enable our customers to make the better decisions. So, it's all about better choices and us being able to inspire our customers along that journey. So whether that's, an unpackaged section in our store, which encourages refill and reuse, come in and get your nuts and grains or your shower gel in your own container, or the communication of organic meat and dairy, this kind of whole climatarian, reducitarianism diets are kind of terms we're seeing more of now.
Reducitarian, I can't believe you've even said that word.
I know.
I don't know if I like it or I hate it.
I know, yeah, it's like what's going to be next, but I think it's still good, isn't it, because it's just trying to, you know, encourage everybody out there that, you know, it's about balance and moderation, really, isn't it? And it's just if you can make those better choices, you know, whether it's from, you know, the where you buy your meat from or your dairy.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so right, gloves off then. Let's get the predictions for next year. It doesn't matter if you're wrong. I'm not going to sack either of you if you get these completely wrong. The wilder, the better. I'm interested in reasons why you think they might be the trends for next year. Is it societal events? Is it climate change, or is it you know, response to something else? Let's have some predictions. Mike, what do you see being the big areas for next year?
Okay, well, actually, one area that I think will be pretty big is nostalgia. Mm-hmm. This is something that we spoke about. I think comfort will become more and more of an issue. I think, unfortunately, we'll probably see next year continued disruption to life again. And as a result of that, consumers will have their moments of escapism. I also think seasonality will play a massive role next year.
Slow down.
Okay.
Some examples of those nostalgia foods. Are we talking old-fashioned chocolates or cod old-fashionedism in the marketing of things, or are there specific products that you're thinking of?
Yeah, I would say the consumers will be really interested in relaunches of discontinued products on a limited time basis. They'll seek out products that remind them of their childhood. It doesn't necessarily need to be the brand, but you know, something about products. And again, yeah, I remember, you know, in times of uncertainty, there was a really interesting thing. After the 9/11 attacks in 2001, sales of meatloaf shot up dramatically. And the reason for that was consumers wanted those moments of comfort, you know. And I think, you know, comfort and escapism will be a big thing, particularly as I think what will happen is consumers will step back from daily life and increasingly reprioritize what's important to them. Mm. And they'll go, hang on, I've had a couple of years of real disruption to my life. I'm adjusting to what this new normal is. Actually, I kind of don't just want to be surviving from it. I actually kind of want to be enjoying it. So how do I enjoy it? So, well, first I want to maximize personal relationships with family and friends. So I think there'll be a big thing about products that ensure connectivity, share that whole thing of turning your phone down off and having a face-to-face chat with them. Mm. I think there'll also be a real focus on, you know, reversing mealtime fragmentation and families making a greater effort to sit down together and eat, which will bring back a real focus on wholesomeness and nutrition. As I said, you know, people have those daily moments of escapism. On the other end, what I think we'll see is some complete levels of fatigue from this, and consumers saying, well, actually, I'm just not going to pay attention anymore to what's going on in the news, and they'll look out to enjoy themselves. And I think the one thing you'll see in society at the moment, it's going to be so polarized, where there's some who evolves in that continued state of consciousness, and then there's others who are continuously fatigued by what's happened over the last couple of years. And then they'll go for the real indulgent products, you know, and they won't care about micronutrient intake. Mm. They won't care about, you know, calorie content in the short term. It'll be very much about going out and enjoying themselves and picking products that they feel reflect their attitude and outlook in life, and sharing those experiences. So I think what you'll see over the next, you know, 24 months or so, is that real polarization. In one sense, comfort, nostalgia, maximizing personal relationships, very much a back to basics approach. And then the others, people just kind of almost kind of come out of what you could perhaps call a COVID coma and say, you know, actually, I'm gonna live my life to the max.
Yeah.
So I think you'll see a real polarization of trends over the next couple of years. The one thing that I would say as well is, when it comes to focusing on these trends, is to become less conscious with buzzwords, and, you know, kind of look at more of the general trends. So, you know, the word reductionist was mentioned beforehand, and I generally don't know.
Reductionarian? What was it, Sophie? What was the word you used?
Reducitarianism.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand how they differentiate from a flexitarian. You know, because a vegan doesn't touch any animal produce, vegetarians have dairy but not meat, flexitarians are just people who kind of are half committed, so they'll say that they're cutting down on this stuff, but they might nip out for the occasional McDonald's in a moment of weakness. So I don't know how they differ from the reductionarian. And the one thing that we always say is to try and move away from the, you know, the outright buzzwords, and just kind of look at some of the wider trends and the way that consumers are behaving. But yeah. Again,
where's the fun in that? Sorry, no, you're absolutely right.
I think one of the problems that we're going to have over the next couple of years is you can make predictions, and then within 6 weeks they could change because of a new variant or restrictions or other changes in weather. So I think that's something that the key focus for the industry is to really focus on dynamics and focus on polarization and almost kind of have this consumer A, consumer B. Consumer A is the optimist, consumer B is the pessimist. How do they respond? How can you target them with products? And then, you know, kind of flip between consumer A and consumer B based on what the situation is in the wider world.
Yeah. Okay. I'm still fascinated by the idea of nostalgic foods and what I'd like to bring back from my childhood. I mean, I mainly remember food when I was growing up being crap everywhere. So I'm not sure if there's much I'd like to go back to. But is there one particular sort of nostalgia product, Mike, that you would like to reinvigorate?
Well, I mean, the thing where you tend to see it a lot,
tripe,
is breakfast cereals, and soft drinks and impulse kind of snacks. So those kind of moments that you have, and you're absolutely right, because what some people do is they tend to have tinted glasses on with these products, so they remember them as being better than they actually were. But the thing is, it's because they're reminding them of the happiness moment and the kind of, you know, that moment of security. But I think those impulse categories, such as soft drinks, confectionery, cereals, that's where, you know, it will continue to be the big area for nostalgic launches.
Hi there, it's only me. I just want to break into the conversation to say that if you're enjoying this, you might want to check out another podcast on this topic. We've got an episode which asked, will the food advertising ban help improve public health? It's a great listen, and we dug deep into the health claims and the claims of the advertising industry. Check out the website for more information at foodmatterslive.com. And while you're there, check out the archive too. We've got around 200 editions that examine every aspect of the food industry. Okay, now back to the chat. Sophie, your predictions then for next year, is it sort of generalized concepts, or is it specific products that you're excited about?
Oh, both. But I will try and break this down into kind of, I guess, three key areas and give some product examples alongside that. So I briefly touched on keto, I think earlier. So keto, kind of the fundamentals of that is low sugar, low carb and high fat. I think a lot of our customers are definitely kind of interested in these products branded as keto, more from a low sugar and low carb lifestyle, as opposed to it being about high fat, because actually be on a keto diet, it is quite hard to manage, you know, with your day-to-day life and various kind of events in people's lives. So I think we'll see kind of off the back of keto, more growth around low sugar and low carb, and how people can bring that into their cooking. So I'm on the lookout for a keto cauliflower pizza, for example. Mm-hmm. We do sell cauliflower pizzas at the moment, but they're not actually officially low carb, or, you know, almond pasta. It's taking typical, maybe more high carb areas and innovating. So I think we'll see a lot happen in that space. Mm-hmm. And veganism. So I can't not mention that and the unbelievable amount of innovation we've seen over the years. But really kind of what I'm looking for and what I do think will happen is kind of awareness around the provenance of the ingredients within veganism. So there's a fantastic brand called Homodods who are growing grains and quinoa here in England. And I think kind of brands taking that and making and producing products which tick the vegan message, but also the provenance and local side of things.
And do you think that will damage the sort of meter-like products, which are relatively high in ingredients that need to have sort of technical functions? Do you think they will suffer from that?
I think so, yeah. I mean, to be honest, we are, I guess, a slight exception in that actually when we look at our sales, or we look at where the growth's coming from within the vegan kind of meat alt space, it's really from the whole food burgers. So legumes and beans and grains, which don't typically have maybe soy protein or pea protein in. So yeah. I think that will nicely work for our customers. So I would love to see a split pea and forage mushroom vegan burger on the shelves. So anyone out there. But yeah, I guess that's kind of what I think will happen within veganism and, you know, having a more simple, natural ingredient deck.
Yeah.
And I suppose finally, functionality. I know that that's something that Mike has touched on, but it's brands and products positioning themselves to kind of really target consumers as to what their product benefits actually are, whether that's sleep, mood, or digestive health. Mm. I think, you know, it tends to start in the drink space within ready to drink, but I think we'll see that across several categories. And I suppose kind of that's my main predictions for the year.
Yeah. So we've got three areas. Any particular products themselves? I will allow you a plug for something you're really excited by.
I'm very excited. So we have this brand called Planet Cuckoo. It's a chickpea flour frittata brand, which we currently have on the shelf, but they have some very exciting development for next year, which I won't go into the full details of, but it's along the kind of chickpea flour base with roast veg and other lots of natural ingredients. So I'm really excited about that. But yeah, definitely check out the vegan frittatas.
Excellent. Okay, that was your plug. Now wind your neck in. Right. Okay, so the last question I've got for both of you is, have there been anything, any products that, or even sort of trends that you saw everyone getting really excited about at one point that never happened or never took off or faded or folded? Mike, is there something that one thing that everyone was excited by and the consumers just didn't like?
Yeah, I mean, throughout the years, you've seen plenty of fads where, you know, it's kind of fizzled out. You know, when I first joined the industry, you know, everyone was talking about superfoods. And then they kind of fizzled out because, you know, there was some kind of slightly outrageous claims around antioxidants and what they were capable of.
That's right.
I remember the coconut water trend, you know, where, again, you know, it was seen to explode. And there was plenty of people who thought that they liked the taste of coconut water. And I think they were getting confused with pina colada, because when they actually tasted it, you know, they kind of realized that it was a very functional drink. So, you know, that was going from very mainstream. Everyone was talking about how it replaced carbonated drinks, and it didn't quite happen.
Yeah.
The CBD market is something that I think will be really interesting to see what happens in the next few years, and also the hard seltzer market, whether they actually become more mainstream. You know, we've had for the last 10 years people talking about, you know, when processed insects become a general trend. And again, I don't think we'll ever be able to move away from that concept, that some consumers will find them to be just a bit too radical. But at the same time, you know, when you talk about trends that have fizzled out, we've also seen trends sometimes that were ahead of their innovation. We're ahead of the time. And then, you know, if you relaunch them 5 years later, you know, it would be a great idea. And you know, I remember in 2008, the idea of a chocolate drink with probiotics in was seen as crazy, because how could, you know, a chocolate product be tasty if it was positioned around beneficial bacteria? Mm. How could a product be healthy if it was chocolate? You know, so, you know, those kind of things were seen as way too ahead of the time. But, you know, now if you saw a chocolate milk probiotic, you would think that's absolutely normal and a good way of, you know, boosting your nutritional intake in a convenient way. So whilst we've seen trends fizzle out, we've also seen trends that sometimes you say, well, actually, they generally did see the innovation and they did see the consumer need state, and for some reason it never took off. But you know, then 5 years later, you would go, oh, actually, you know, if that was launched again, it would be a huge success.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So Sophie, predictions that never came true for you. What are your favorites? Or your bête noirs?
Yeah. Well, I would say, so bone broth is an area which does very well for us at Planet Organic. And we see a lot of volume and sales growth year on year. But given how well veganism does, and that kind of being the driving force behind a lot of our sales, I'd expected to have seen more within that space, to be honest. So more vegan amino broth. But we've tried it and it hasn't worked. maybe there's an opportunity. Again, like Mike says, maybe it's a bit ahead of its time and it needs to gain momentum. That was always a product I thought would have done better. It always stands out in my mind.
Mm.
Hemp milk has a it's incredibly sustainable crop. I thought that would have taken off more, to be honest. I guess, you know, just the Oatly sales and other dairy-free milk sales have just rocketed, so that's not really taken off, but might do, might just take a bit of time. And I think, yeah, CBD in food, really. So we've seen it in ready to drink and it does do well. I suppose it ticks onto kind of a lot of other boxes. But yeah, I guess they're the three main areas or kind of products which jump out immediately as not really taking off.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's hope all your predictions for the future do come true, and that that next year is a little bit more predictable in its unpredictability, I guess. Sophie Davies and Mike Hughes, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast, brought to you by Food Matters Live. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore the whole landscape of the food industry, from the boom in ag tech to government food policy. Recent highlights have included an edition on the secrets of great food photography and an episode busting the myths around intermittent fasting. Follow to get every edition freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And thank you so much for listening. We'll